it's pretty likely that we're going to come up with another variant that's a problem.
The frightening statistic, speaking of statistics, that I heard today, 52% of Americans say that they won't be vaxxed under any circumstances. That sounds very troubling, given everything that you've just explained.
You're saying that 52% won't get a vaccine?
That's what I heard today upon
That's interesting
NPR.
Because more than that already have.
I would say of the remaining people who are
not. Herd immunity is an interesting thing because it depends upon the infectivity of the virus. Back when we were developing our vaccination strategies, the infectivity of the virus as measured by the R-naught number was maybe 2.3, I think, was the number that was most common.
That is, one will give it
yes,
to 2.3.
And that's people who don't,
others.
Who aren't doing anything to protect themselves. And we got that number down to around one. That's why the natural virus is gone, essentially. And when it's at one, less than one, then the infections gradually die out. And if your virus, if your R-naught value is 2.3, it takes approximately 70% herd immunity to counter that.
Dr. Lieberman, I'm going to stop you right there, put this into a two-part program to cut this now, and then we'll come back with part two. Thank you for listening to this episode of Times Like Now. Past episodes can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Part two of my interview with Dr. Howard Librand will be next week. Thank you to the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original music. I'm Trevor Collins, and I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Had him on my whoa, 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 whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
This is Art Focus, and I'm Aurora Josephson, presenting the eighth in a series of studio visits with artists during the pandemic. This is part one of two. My guest today is Baba Wage Jaikite. Wage is the founder and executive director at the Kofalan Cultural Center, which provides workshops to Westerners at Art in the Pearl each year, as well as teaching children and adults in Mali, Africa, in areas ranging from master mudcloth class to tutoring programs. Wage has told the stories of his tribe through his pottery, which he took up after meeting his wife Rana Nushwander and moving to Portland in 1985. He has exhibited his pottery at a number of galleries in Portland, including Jameson Thomas Gallery and Pulliam Deffenbaugh Gallery. He has also illustrated children's books and received the Coretta Scott King Honor Book Award for his own children's book. You may see current works from Wage's pottery studio, as well as a preview of the paintings to be exhibited in the January 2022 group show at the new Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University, Wage's Top 5 Juices, in addition to the address for the art sale on October 15, 16, and 17 in his backyard, all on my website, aurorajosephson.com. I am here today for the eighth in my series of interviews during the pandemic at Rana and Wage's house. Thank you so much for having me here, and we're going to talk a little bit about what you're up to now in the studio, including an exciting group show in January of 2022 at the new Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University. And maybe you want to say a little more. It's in connection with the PSU Black Lives Matter Artist Grant Program. And you've made, I see that we have a portrait here. Is it Amilcar Cabral?
Yes, it's Amilcar Cabral. So I like to introduce myself. And my name is Baba Wage Jaikite. And indeed, we're in Wage and Rana's home. But today's interview was me, right?
Yes.
Okay, because Rana isn't here. We'll try to get her in. This portrait that you see It's just a continuation of ideas that gel with the event that's been taking place in the United States for maybe 3, 4, 5 years now. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of, that's the positive side, you know, to the whole thing, because the world is one place. And when something happens in one side of the world, no matter how new it happened in different place, someone like myself see it as the continuation of what I've seen in the past. And it's really exciting for me to actually see the idea of Black Lives Matter, you know, continue in modern America, because it's an old thing. If you know about the Pan-Africanism, since the time when Africans were in the World War II in Europe, when the war was finished, and that was the beginning of the creation of Pan-Africanism, or the idea of Pan-Africanism. And Africans that remained there were still so discriminated and so third party of human, which, you know, nobody liked to be a third party. So therefore, they often got together trying to figure it out, what can they do to help the colored people around the world? And the Pan-Africanism idea was African descent will not be looked down in the Western atmosphere. But I would say, I don't know if it's we can call it failure, that it failed, because the ideas never came together well. Because some of them think Western education is the one that having the same level of education will be what African descent need to survive. Yes, to some extent, that is true. Mm-hmm. It's being proven today that, yes, having to be educated your own help you to some level. But education is really for our own individual way of seeing the world and how we can deal with. But it wasn't really necessarily the solving problem of racism around the world. And other Africans say, well, you know, we, as long as we continue speaking and create our government with Western language, we're still under their colonization. And others say, no, we need to create our own language, our own writing. There was a lot of debate in what Pan-Africanism really should be. But to today, the idea is still floating. There was not real solution on Pan-Africanism. But from the World War II to now, and Africans went to the West and they get great education. Those who stayed in the mainland also had great education, and African descent in diaspora all have good educations. And we know now that the question was not to be able to read and write that we would be free. Because what happened in the United States most recently, and there's a lot of African descents that are in the U.S. Congress and have become U.S. president, and did it stop racism? So the earlier days, those who say we need to create our own writing and send our children to our own school, I believe today as an African, that would have been the best, to be respected for what you have or who you are. But unfortunately, today, Africa is still a mess. And we are losing our own culture over Western culture still. So I don't know how far we can go with this whole thing.
Your center, the Kofala Center, is that mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That's a place that you go to part of the year? Is that correct?
Yes,
and it's a school.
Exactly. And that's why my portion... somebody who will know me beyond Portland artist may actually painted my picture for this show, because all of us are not out there, you know, with words, but where action is really something very important that also balance well with words. But that's what I've been doing. Not only you jump over here and say Mali, no, I have been in the United States for 37 years. And during that 37 years, I'm always in the public school teaching kids, not only about art making, but also about the world through stories. You know, how do a small boy live in their lives in a very isolated small town in Mali or West Africa, anywhere? That kind of thing. I share African history because the African histories that are being taught in college level here really is written by someone who wanted to see those African history. Even African descent, that our African history teachers are teaching these things to people, knowing that there's so much that is wrong. That's not our African history. I am an African, but I am actually a world citizen, and a lot of people are afraid or ashamed to actually said openly where they come from. Yes, I come from Mali. I come from a very small village, and I never grew up rich. And I'm very fortunate that I lived that life, because that may have been contributed to my survival, working in the garden with my aunt, my uncle, my grandparent, to feed ourselves to today. And that lifetime in the village was a gift to me. I just was raised by my grandparent and my uncles. My father passed when I was a little boy. So therefore, it was a gift to me. The reason why we like human to be there for other human is like this. I don't have a professional ambassador license, but I am an ambassador between Africa and United States, especially West Coast, where African culture is less exposed. We have a lot of Ghanaians, we have a lot of people from Nigeria, but Africa is a lot bigger than that. It's 3.5 times bigger than the United States. So I am doing my part. Not only I do that in the United States, art teaching, storytelling, both to children from kindergarten all the way to college, and also communities, not just the school, but also communities. And for that same reason, I have a Kofale organization that run programs in Africa. Originally, it was meant to bring group of people from United States to work with Africans, and we did that for a really good amount of time until insurgents, terrorists in the Timbuktu area now had bled all over West Africa. So that came and prevent me to continue my cultural exchange ambassador role, which I love this. I just used to connect people, that's it. And then art program all day at the center, the children go to school, and I ask my fellow American to give classes to the students voluntarily, and it worked so perfectly. But nowadays, it's so unfortunate that I can't take European friends and those who are willing to come to my cultural center to actually absorb some cultural differences and see new thing and be new person. And that's a psychological problem solving. People don't realize that. But sometimes in the West, we are spoiled. We want other people to speak our language. Right. We want other people to do what we do. If a Western person generally is not familiar with it, and then it is savage. And we need to put that kind of mentality on the side and realize that the brain that is flexible is the healthy brain, because going to places also and linger with people and observe, that observation is such a beautiful, it's better than pills that you take. And anyone that went to Mali with me several times will tell you that. That's why I become a coordinator between the cultural Kofale organization in Portland and also in Bamako, because I can deal with both culture at once.
So you have an Instagram as well that you can see for the Kofala. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah, there is a Kofale website. First of all, is www.kofale.org. Kofale is KOFALEN.org. So anyway, when I was going to school back in the 1970s, Amical Cabral was one of the hero image all over Africa. It just absolutely stand up for the right of people, not just young people. Education was one of his big things. You know, students, we loved him because always talk openly about, you know, education and how our own self are denying our children education. And also politically, he was all over. I mean, he was a guy that was very well known. Mm-hmm. And but what really made me, you know, attracted to this era plus with Amical Cabral is because the corruptions in Africa were so little. So corruption in Africa, I know the West keeps saying every time we blame the West for African problem, but this idea that came from our forefathers that were trying to create the Pan-Africanism, and the side that we're talking about, the inconvenience of Western education is this. The African descent that are abroad are living under a prosperous way of, you know, life in terms of earning, getting an education and earn money from it in the honest way. So in Africa, we have English speaking, French speaking, Portuguese speaking, Spanish speaking. All these countries, they are running their governments as the ex-colonial countries. So therefore, an educated African, Western educated African today is acting just like, even more so than a French that is in France. So therefore, they see the government as a platform of earning. As in the Western atmosphere, we love the idea of privatization, because it's a private sector that a lot of people can get job and also earn in a satisfactory level. The government are great. They are the locomotive of the whole thing, but the government shouldn't be richer than the country itself. And that's the problem in Africa. They think the government is the wealth. So here's the fight. Everybody want to be a government worker instead of creating private business. And therefore, the reason, so they can steal public money that is from the West, from every source, you know. And that's the problem we have in Africa now. So it is not racism in a way, but it is still an oppression on your own people by implementing Western idea and be worse than that. Not only they look down to people who are not Western educated, but they trick them too. So as a result, this is how Africa is losing its own tradition and its own culture, its own understanding on anything.
And you've spent your whole life actually making pottery, telling the stories of your youth on the pottery. I've enjoyed them very much over the years.
Yeah.
But you said you told me you're going to stop making the pottery and that you're having an art sale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's October 15, 16, and 17.
Yes.
In the backyard.
Yep.
And so this is it. No more pottery?
Well, I'm going to stop excessive making of pottery. And it's not because that I don't like pottery. It's because, you know, shifting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And before these Black Lives Matter situation camp appears to the world, and you knew that it was coming. You knew it was coming, and because I at least colored people, you know, we African have a different perspective than African American. Therefore, I mean, some of them claim that we didn't live in their experience, but what they didn't know, that experience is the continuation that something that happened in the mainland for, you know, 800 years, you know. So actually, I do feel that I don't see a separation between a colored person experience here or and what my father talked about. It's the same story except in different place. Mm. And therefore when difficulties are coming like that, the very first things that they start hitting is humanity at its source. Art is everything. We may be separating a computer engineer or a computer software maker somewhere or an airplane builder. This is all art. It is the source of our humanity. And it all came about because open communication. People cannot bring their thoughts together if there is no dialogue. But what is worse, it's really in the Western atmosphere, people are afraid to talk to one another. And therefore, the fear linger and thicken like a dark gray cloud over all of us. We fear one another. And I have seen that here a lot of time. Even when I'm walking to 24 hour, I'm coming, there's a white person, it's just a black person, one-on-one, it may be a dangerous man. Some people almost throw themselves in front of the car, trying to avoid that. Which, when you see that in the place, you really realize you're different.
Yeah.
You know, you're different, and so we do all see this experience, you know, to a point that you finally realize that the stories you hear from all of your African American friends, that there is a reality to it. Because when you come from Africa, you really think everybody live in humanity together at peace. Mm. Well, and now those experiences happen to myself, and I can also see quite often that I'm treated differently than my counter friends. But that's all right, because I live in a different place. You know, however, the way you actually make yourself at once with the place is absolutely stick with the good stories, good memories, and I think that is what's making someone like me survive here.
Okay, so this brings me to my next question for you. How, if at all, has COVID changed the art making process for you?
Well, COVID had changed this, you know, these two big things that connected to one another. We all know that Black Lives Matter really did motivate a lot of people to have reasons to make art, and also motivate them to, to write, to do mural, and so forth. And that was great. But the concept, the COVID that followed this whole situation, truly become a problem, a big burden for many, many artists, because art is not just the making in the studio, it's also your social connection. And it is, artists do a lot more than scrambling colors on the canvas. They also make sure they keep an eye in the outside world, the connections and, you know, events that take place that we promote. We create our own little recognition in our small community, and that has to be constant. And if something come and bury an artist in his or her studio or in his or her small environment, then the art making will become something, sort of like a writer, you know, making a book and sit in his own home and read it. I mean, it comes from you. An art piece is like that. It's information, it's writing, it's a story. It needs to be out there. It is the way that people find the lost pieces of humanity and the common ground that is between, you know, human, community-based thing. If art stop, that's the stop, the end of the dialogue. So basically, that's what this time and COVID did to not only artists, but to our community as whole. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we all kind of lingered in our studio or in our environment with sad recognition, but we had to do something. And the great thing about Black Lives Matter is that they engage in reaching out, but they understand somewhat that art is the motivation, is the nourishment of the community. It can't stop. So those who were affected in that are color artists like myself had a lot of reach out by people, community interviews, and small little things like that. Mm-hmm. That actually helped my personal psychological impact in this moment. And but, you know, it really did stop us. But one of the great thing about artists, to me, an artist is sort of like, you know, someone living in eternal life, life that has no end. We are like the tortoise. We can live underground, in the mud, in the water, no matter what. Sometimes if we have to leap, we leap. So this is the life of an artist. Artists, but the true meaning of artists really is that, you know, in the mind is someone who understand, you know, what's going on in his or her own way. It doesn't make it the reality, the truth to other people, but many people can resonate with art for that reason, because they connect with the artist through that art. And so artists we're used to, you know, go through hard survival from the ancient time to now. So, but COVIDs are like, I mean, it was something that the way it really come and whip all of us, and we lost loved ones, and so much went on, but art has remained our strength, our relief. It's like a summer, winter time little wind coming during a hot summer time to give relief. And art really is doing that within us at this moment.
Well, thank you so much for sharing the time with me and inviting me to your studio.
Yeah.
It's a delight talking with you.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, Oregon, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in Hood River. This is Art Focus, And you have been listening to the 8th in a series of Pandemic Studio Visits Part 1. My guest today was Baba Wage Jaikite. I am Aurora Josephson.
Andy Whoa Whoa looks a scream. Add him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy Whoa Whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
En el 90.7 FM y a través de la internet en yaboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7.